Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 123 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So,
thank you for getting the episode number correct.
Yeah, just I had to FYI. Really go back and research that. So
I was going to tell you before we started the episode number. So the last two episodes we did as a two-part series, and the first opener of the two-part series, we had described our episode number incorrectly. So sorry to all those listeners to be so confusing. But don't worry, our director of marketing totally fixed that for us.
Also, speaking of director of marketing, I don't listen to these very often, but I did listen to the last part of our interview with Dr. Yi the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the closing music come in about 30 minutes before we closed. And
30 minutes?
30 seconds, pardon me.
So it was like
we all make mistakes. Rhonda made a mistake there. She's going to be listening right now.
So like
music
was overplaying on words. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So you were like, check in next week, and it's like dun 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 dun.
Did you listen to a couple of them? Is that how it's been?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
I think she probably drowns me out quite a bit with music.
Yeah, I've not had a chance to even speak to her about that, but surprise, Rhonda. Just need to kind of correct that. But once again, yeah, we all make mistakes. So I'm not necessarily throwing her under the bus. So, dreary day in Lawrenceville, Georgia.
It's gross outside.
On this second full weekend of the NFL season.
So it's hot and humid, but the overcasty, like threatened to rain is kind of gross. Which yeah. I think yesterday in Clemson, like there was a huge delay in the game. So like last night, Lance is like, oh, we're probably going to get some bad weather. But I guess it kind of blew over yesterday, and we're going to see probably some of that tonight then.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's just been sprinkle, rain, cloudy all day. Just, yeah, kind of muggy.
That's the only thing about sports I know of. This weekend.
The Clemson's game was delayed. Okay.
Yeah, yesterday.
Did Georgia win?
No idea.
Yeah, they did.
Oh. So they are did. They undefeated right now in like
they're
all
undefeated,
three games?
Undefeated, ranked number two in the country behind Alabama. So
so this is like three games then. So like the preseason game where they beat Clemson.
Okay, there's no preseason in college.
Okay, so what is it then? It's a game that doesn't count?
The first game.
It wasn't actually a seasonal game, though, I thought.
It was. It was not a conference game.
Oh, okay.
But it was, yeah, at the beginning of the season when they beat Clemson. And then Clemson almost got beaten by Georgia Tech yesterday.
And then they beat my friends over at UAB.
Yeah, pretty badly. And then South Carolina yesterday. So Kirby has them playing well.
Good.
There's a lot going on. I don't even know where to start. I jotted a couple of things down. I guess I wanted to start with what I did this past weekend, which was I attended the SOC committee meeting for veterinary study groups down in Atlanta.
Okay, so SOC means nothing to anybody. So Strategic
Operating Committee.
Okay.
It's so as you know, I'm a member of a study group in veterinary medicine,
which we talked about here before, right? Talking
veterinary
about
study
elitist
groups
veterinary groups,
and each individual group is called a veterinary management group, and there's typically anywhere between 14 and 22 members in a group from across the nation. Right?
And so, ideally, earlier this year, maybe that changed or whatnot, but they are private owner.
Privately
practices.
Held, yes.
Yeah.
Private practice, not corporately owned, and we just kind of do our thing. We feed off each other and learn.
Most
things
of the
from
members are practicing managing veterinarians like yourself.
Yep, and so we in our group we have a couple of members in Florida, Colorado,
Oregon.
California, Oregon,
Pennsylvania,
Michigan,
Wisconsin.
So all over the country, Philadelphia. Mark up in Philadelphia.
Actually, I don't think we have Louisiana anymore.
Yeah, maybe not. So anyway, I was down at the meeting, and it was really good to get back and have an in-person meeting with some of my peers. And it was kind of interesting that a lot of industry leaders were there presenting their products, but also kind of trying to give us their spin on what's been going on in COVID. And a couple of big topics. One was efficiency. Like, we have got to become more efficient and you and I have talked about this, like we probably do have enough staff, but as we've gotten busier, we just have to increase our efficiency in communications and record keeping and getting people in and out. And so that we could talk about that for days. But
so yes, but since we're talking about this, can I like totally insert something?
Yeah.
So I read an article yesterday, or maybe it was just like a headline of an article in my inbox about like how to know when your practice manager is gaslighting you. And so I kind of looked it up and I was like, what in the heck is gaslighting?
Like lighting a fire underneath you to
no.
try to...
So gaslighting is apparently what people are thinking that practice managers and doctors and whatever are doing to their staff. In essence, so it is like... It's, I guess it's like an emotional and mental like abuse essentially.
What?
But you're changing, you're making them feel like their perceptions and their reality are not real. And I had a really hard time with this, like thinking like, do I gaslight people? And I don't think I do, but I really do try to open their eyes to
their own. So is the article going like, oh, you're not that busy, just suck it up, buttercup, and you know, this is the way it is, and so just keep doing your job. Is that what they're talking about?
So I didn't really read the article because I went down the rabbit hole of like figuring out truly the meaning of gaslighting. And so according to like Google, gaslighting is a form of manipulation that occurs in abusive relationships.
Oh,
I would like to think that I don't have an abusive relationship with anybody, but it's basically where you, how do I explain it?
Well, I mean, I think
someone leads you to question your own reality. And so a lot of it went to talk about like that you tell them that what they're feeling is not correct. And I do that in essence, and kind of like what you're talking about with this whole efficiency thing, like our staff and some staff, you know, throughout the country feel like they're just totally overwhelmed by work
overworked, short-staffed
yeah. and all this. And I'm trying truly to change their perception in the sense that it's not that we have too much work. We're just not efficient enough to get the work done in appropriate manner.
I think if you truly believe what you're trying to, I'm going to call it coaching and cheerleading.
Yeah.
And
so I had a hard time with that article.
Applauding their victories, right? And so if you truly believe that, you know, that we are not completely overwhelmed, we can do this, let's all stick together, let's get more efficient, let's take care of our clients, our patients, each other, I don't think that's gaslighting. So I don't know, I don't really like that whole term or
me either.
The,
so
the
that's
theory
what I'm saying
it.
Like I had such a hard time because I was like, I don't necessarily try to manipulate people to think differently, but I do try to educate and open their eyes that like, don't go read an article or, you know, follow a Facebook group of 18 other technicians throughout the country that say that they're, you know, they're overworked and overwhelmed and whatever. Because I know everyone's a part of a Facebook group within our practices.
Yeah.
Don't take that and then make that your own feelings. Like,
if
that's,
one of our,
that's not
if,
really
if
how we are.
One of my employees, like, looks at me after a comment in this next week and says, oh my gosh, Dr. Miller, I can't believe you're gaslighting me. I'm just, my jaw's going to drop to the floor. Like, really? Let's go up and have a private conversation because that's not what's going on. So, so the whole efficiency thing, as you're continuing to search something over there.
No, I was just looking for the article. It says how to intervene when a manager is gaslighting their employees.
So a big topic of conversation at the meeting I was at and really coming back to the practice this week is we are busy. So this past week, I feel like is probably on the days that I worked on the clinical floor, that's probably as busy as I've ever been.
Which was Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, right?
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Four
you know,
days
I normally will, I'm going to say cut or have, I'll have, I don't know, four or five cases a day. And I'm having like 10 procedures a day. And it's really hard to get through them. We're working through lunch. We're kind of taking our appointments that start after lunch and pushing them further into the afternoon just so that we can get our procedures done. And so, you know, why are we as an industry so busy? And so, again, at this conference this past weekend, people from all over the country, I'm hearing about, oh, we can't hire enough veterinarians. We can't hire enough staff. Oh, we're having to push appointments out. We can't. We just can't. We can't. We can't. We can't. And so, I think we talked about this on the podcast. The reason that we have gotten busier, Matt Saloy, the chief economist for AVMA, you and I talked about a study that he and another cohort did a few weeks ago, and he presented that study for about an hour and a half on Sunday. And we are busier because it's not because we have a ton of new pets entering our new clinic with new adoptions or new acquisitions. It's because our current clientele are doing more for their pets. And so during the COVID pandemic, which we're still, you know, hopefully we're coming out of it, but we all felt like, oh, all the shelters were being emptied. Everybody went out and got a new pet, which some people did. But personally, and the data also shows that that's not the reason that we have gotten so busy. It's
so
because
you're quoting the AVMA data,
I'm
though.
Quoting the AVMA data, and I'm also putting my spin on it because I agree with it. It's because people are doing more for their pets. People are not have not been up until, let's say, a month or two ago. They weren't vacationing, so they had more disposable income. If they were getting, unemployment.
Sure.
Right. A lot of people made twice the amount of money or put it in the bank from unemployment than they did from their real job. So there was more disposable income, more time with the pet, more humanization of the pet, a better bond with the pet, I would say. And anytime they would see a problem, we would tend to get a phone call to make an appointment. And so it is kind of a perfect storm.
Yeah, I will disagree, though, in that AVMA article, and I feel like we talked about that. And then what is the other guy that that was at your meeting who does the, that's all he does, pet data?
Yeah, David Sprinkle. Sprinkle or Sprinkles.
So I read through his data, too.
Package Facts.
Months ago. And so there are people that are acquiring pets for the first time ever.
There are, but
it's not the majority of the reason why. Yes.
And that is a significant, in our practices, we probably have had twice the number of new pets and or new clients on a monthly basis since this started.
I don't know. Our new clients are pretty consistent, but the new pets for sure. But new clients with first time ownership, I would say that has increased. Now, it's not something that we track, but of the conversations I've had with people, of the times that I've been in exam rooms, the things that I've heard on the floor, it's like, oh yeah, this lady has no idea. She's never had a dog before or whatever. So I know what the data is saying, across the country.
You're
but
not incorrect.
I'm just saying,
here locally, we do have more.
Happening.
We do have more, but I get big picture. That's not the major reason why we were so busy.
Agreed.
It's current clientele taking better care of their pets, doing more for their pets as needed, when needed, and probably having more disposable income to take care of them. So, healthy
and
pet, happy
life. Not to mention
life.
The whole curbside thing, right? So, the entire country was curbside for 15 months.
Yeah, and at this
and
meeting,
that's super slow.
Everybody, it slows you down. It becomes less efficient. But now, quote unquote, industry leaders are saying, oh, curbside is here to stay. I do not disagree. It'll be here in a very minor part of what we do.
Yep.
For the elderly client, the client with a toddler in a carrier, I'm making the motion
that's
of
an infant, but
infant carrier that you don't want to get out of the car. Yes, pull up, call the number on our sign. We will be happy to run out your food and take care of you along the curbside. We can go get your pet, bring it in for a nail trim, bring it out.
Right.
Absolutely, we want to be convenient and do that. But when that is said that that's here to stay, that doesn't mean that's the major way we do business moving forward.
Right.
So,
but I do feel like that also has an impact of why people feel like they're busier, right? Because they're doing more, but less, but also more, if that makes sense. Less communication with the owner directly in the exam room, but they're trying to talk to the owner, three times more than they did so that we can express, value and what's happening. And
so I think on Tuesday, one of our techs, Jen C., shared with me at the end of an appointment with an ortho consult that I had. She's like, oh yeah, so I went in, I checked them out, and we scheduled the next appointment, and I offered, do they need some help out with the out to the car with their pet? And their pet is like a 110-pound husky. And she's like, she frowned. She's like, oh gosh, the lady said no, but the guy said, oh yeah, I'd like a little help. And so she had to help walk the dog out. Right when it got in the parking lot, it kind of collapsed and just refused to move. So they had to pick the dog up, carry it to the car, lift it into the car. She came back in sweating, completely exhausted. And so, that's not super efficient with our staff, but it's really excellent client care and customer service. So, but I don't know. It's everywhere. This is industry specific what we're talking about, but I'm sure it spills over into the restaurant industry, maybe retail, maybe not. I don't know. It's just super, super weird times that we're in.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like I keep cutting you off and kind of going back and forth. But so they were talking about efficiency at your meeting, mm-hmm. and the fact that it's not that we're busier, but we are busier, but essentially we're inefficient, which is what we've been saying, which is what my fear was the moment we closed the doors back March of 2020.
We did become super inefficient, but we were very fearful. We were trying to follow guidelines.
Right.
Our clients were fearful. Really, really weird times. I am super proud of our entire staff. When we did open the doors back up, it was a very, a week or two before we were pretty much back in the normal routine. But still, you know, every day is a different day here.
Of course.
It's just the different battles that we deal with, whether it's a family member of a staff member that is, you know, is COVID positive now. Are they sick? Are they not? Are you vaccinated? Are you not? It's just, it's a scramble.
Yeah.
As you know, I mean, you have to deal with it more than I do, is definitely regarding staffing. I don't know. You know, we talk about this. We kind of complain about all of the struggles we're going through. But then the little asterisk always pops up. Could be worse. We could have zero clientele coming here with zero pets, and we could all be without a job.
Sure, of course.
So I think, you know, super proud of our GVA team. For the most part, we've all been up to the challenge. Maybe some days are better than others, but everybody's really trying to, take care of those that are important to our business. So kudos to us. Couple of stories.
Okay.
One that caught my eye was the Animal Medical Center in New York, which is a... never been there. I really don't know too much about it other than it is a nonprofit veterinary clinic that's been around forever, and it's huge. They just appointed Jacqueline Mavros as their first chief veterinary technician.
Yeah, so I think that's super interesting. I think it's a great,
recognition.
Yeah, for the industry
job
as
title.
A whole, right? Yep. So I'm assuming you said this is a nonprofit, but I'm assuming it's a rather large group.
Super
I
big,
don't
yep.
know necessarily much about them, but reading through the article that you printed, it says that she's going to be responsible for the management of the technician, like the veterinary technician workforce, and all of the related patient care services. So that is like the management level, right? So like they have veterinary nurse managers,
yeah.
They have the technicians, they have assistants, they have clinical educators, and all of these people she's essentially responsible for.
Which, if we're being honest, she probably was before this title. And so... you and I, not recently, but we've had discussions about titles. Titles aren't important, but they are important.
Sure.
And so I would bet you that Miss Jacqueline had a lot, if not all, of these responsibilities before, but she is being somewhat rewarded with a title and hopefully financially to elevate her and give her a little bit more, I'm going to say, authority. But it's like a chief veterinary officer,
well,
right?
So
what is
this? As far as she goes, I don't think that she worked there before. I don't think it was an internal promotion. I think she's joining their team, which I think is great. So I don't know if you remember, but like I used to have this like veterinary technician, like woman crush on Megan Brashears.
For
do you remember
reason, yeah,
from
I
like
do.
At Dove?
Yeah.
Well, she worked in a large veterinary practice, nonprofit as well, in like Oregon, and she kind of made a name for herself in the sense that like she was leading and developing the technicians there in the practice, or so it seemed. Obviously, I didn't work there, but then also like educating technicians across the country by doing videos and stuff. And I don't know that it was necessarily her brainchild to do their at Dove videos, but I do know that she really impacted a lot of technicians with her knowledge and her, I guess, not necessarily level of superiority, but like just how great she was and like all the responsibilities that she had.
I think it's putting herself out there. Like we've talked about a lot of people that speak in our industry, which we've not had them speak for a couple of years,
right.
But the people that publish, that join these task forces, that they really put themselves into that, I'm going to say, teacher mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know Megan Brashears from Joe Blow next door. I mean, I don't. And I don't know what she's done, but I would bet that she's a very good veterinary technician, and I would bet she really applied herself to kind of educate and come up with these things and made that a priority. And she's probably, I mean, she's probably very good at it.
Sure. She doesn't work there anymore. She took a job at a university and then shortly after that took a job as like a nurse manager in the UK.
Yeah.
So, or I know she was very heavily involved in that. And I think veterinary nurses are very different in the UK in the sense that they do call themselves nurses, whereas here it's kind of like one of those bad juju terms. But nonetheless, I think it's a great aspiration for anyone to continue to further their education as a technician.
Back to the okay, she's cut me off.
I was just going to say, we talked about the importance of titles and the non-importance of titles. Okay. And I think for the right person, a title is very important. And I think for people, I'm going to call them subordinates, but people underneath them, like having a title and knowing that there's growth potential or that they could essentially fulfill a role outside of what they're currently doing is also important to people. It's like if you work in, I'm going to use a distribution center because that's where Lance works. So they have like picker, packer, then they have coordinators and managers and senior managers, and then they have directors, and then they have senior directors. And so all of these additional levels, like there's no, if you have the right education and you're in the right department and all that, there's nothing really stopping you from starting at the bottom and going to the top. But you know you have to go through all of these levels. It's not like a direct shot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think titles do have a place.
Hierarchy is very, very important. I guess where my mind goes is you have to walk the walk and talk the talk. Just
Absolutely.
Because you have a title doesn't mean anything to me unless you prove that you deserved and have earned that title and you are that leader or you whatever that position is, you show that you should be there. And so
I think this is where we're going to disagree on a couple of things in the sense that, like, yes, I would agree with you that people do need to earn their title, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't get it until they've earned it. If that makes sense at all. I feel like your mentality is a very old school thing. Like, well, if I call you boss, you're just going to have a big old head about yourself and tell everybody else off. I mean, that's how I feel like you talk when like okay. we're having arguments like this or whatever. But no, I think you have kind of an old school mentality. I'm not saying it's wrong.
You can grow into it. I have known a lot of people in our industry and through our clinics that have come in, you know, come into our clinic and wanted a title, and we've given them that title, and they have failed to produce the work they failed to perform in that title, and that's life. It's not perfect.
So wrong person or whatever, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't have.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
available.
You can't give a second person an opportunity, but
exactly.
I do think there's a balance and a blend there. You know, you don't. I don't know. Maybe you do just get elected president and maybe you shouldn't have been, but that's a horrible analogy, but I don't know. Titles are important. It does establish hierarchy, but it's more the person with the title than the title itself that makes things work well
of
moving
course.
Forward.
And so for those people who don't know a ton about us, we don't have a lot of like titled people, right? Like we have credentialed people, be it the DVMs or the RVTs. But as far as like our leadership management titled team goes, it's very lateral. And the reason being is that we have very much worked super hard on our core values to kind of manage, lead, and guide all of our staff.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I do think that is a great strategy and theory for what we have here and the people that we have here. But I do think that titles are important.
So,
I'm not saying necessarily within our day-to-day lives and jobs, but
yeah.
For her to be the chief veterinary technician, like she should absolutely be the most, forgive my bad
senior
terms, but the most badass technician that place has ever seen.
Should be, yeah.
She should be able to do every single job that she's asking someone to do, know the ins and outs of everything, and then still develop and teach and lead and grow other people.
I've just seen of late different titles within the veterinary industry, like Chief Officer of Continuous Improvement, Chief Officer of Wellness and Happiness.
Okay, so let's pause. So these people are holding roles in corporate medicine, yes?
Yes.
Exactly. So they are only going to become more and more odd
Chief People Officer, I'm looking at right now.
Yes.
So anyway, that's just not us. I mean, you know, we all are, I guess there's going to be too many chiefs and not enough, whatever the saying is, I won't say it, but...
little chiefs.
Yeah, a little chief. So the last article that I think we should probably sign off for this episode, Christine Hayes, DVM Medical Director, American Society of Prevention of Cruelty for Animals, was talking about how many xylitol poisoning cases we have had of late. And I believe it was her that made the recommendation to put a warning label on any product containing xylitol because it can be quite toxic to pets. And so chewing gum is one of the more common sugar-free chewing gum.
I feel like probably 8 years ago is when xylitol toxicity and sugar-free chewing gum like first kind of got its thing. And so I remember being a technician in an exam room, you know, like dogs come in, they're vomiting, they're not really feeling well, whatever. Like, oh, did he get into anything? Oh, yeah, he ate this pack of, you know, Dentine, right? Which I don't even know that Dentine gum is like still a thing.
I've not seen that in forever.
That is the one of the products that I feel like was the first to use xylitol.
But now it's in baking goods and different candies.
So I would agree with this chocolates. Doctor in the sense that it's everywhere. So peanut butter is one of those things that, like, as veterinary people, we used to tell people, like, oh, yeah, you know, peanut butter is good for your dog. Like, if you're having a hard time giving them medications, like, tuck it in a little piece of peanut butter because of the viscosity of it, like, they'll have to swallow the pill. We've seen people smear peanut butter like when giving a dog a bath to keep them distracted so that they're not bothered by the water. But now even peanut butter has xylitol in it.
Really?
And you wouldn't know. Yeah, because they're trying to make all of these healthy versions. Huh. And so this xylitol is a sweetener, but it should be less calorie dense than actual sugar. And so, yes, I agree with her. I think things should have a xylitol warning on it.
I agree.
Because, I don't know, my dog right now has kidney disease and he is...
So do you think... Okay, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say that he's having some trouble eating, right? So he's not always interested in things. And so open the door to the pantry and like, oh, can we offer him this? Can we offer him that? Like, we actually have a jar of peanut butter that actually has like protein powder mixed in it. And so that's not an ideal thing to give him. So I think that things should have labels on them.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it's kind of a turning point and a learning thing for people. Like, you can't just feed your dog as you would your child because we're not the same.
For sure. I would envision they're probably, if this comes to pass, it's probably going to be like food allergens are pointed out on labels. They're going to be in a box. It's going to say warning. Product mm-hmm. contains xylitol, and hopefully a little statement about its toxicity to small animals.
Yeah.
So, peanuts, egg, gluten are human foods with, well, not human foods. Those are ingredients that are pointed out on human food labels currently. And actually I learned, not too long ago that sesame is about to be added because it's become a major allergen in people. Do you know that?
Sesame.
Like a sesame bun or sesame oil.
Interesting. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's in the top five now that allergists see.
So kind of going back to the xylitol thing. So I think one of the biggest arguments for this toxicologist and why she wants things to be on the label is because it's not always like a sugar-free product that has xylitol in it. A lot of times they will put sugar and xylitol in something. And so then blended. It's not a sugar-free product because it, I mean, and so if you're reading labels, you're like, oh, it's, you know, it's real sugar. I can give it to my dog or whatever, which you probably should limit that too. But it is being added into things to reduce the amounts of actual sugar. So again, then these companies are making it seem like their products are, you know, less calorie dense and healthier or whatever. But I definitely think it should say, like, you know, this product is made with xylitol or xylitol added. Or to your point, it's just going to be a small thing on the label.
Probably, yeah.
But no, I definitely agree. I think it should be there.
All right. With that, I'm going to let you sign us out until next week.
All right. So cue the music, Rhonda.
Wait. Do it at the end, Rhonda.
Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Please follow us on Facebook, which I guess we haven't talked about this in a minute, but there's following is not good enough anymore. You have to actually, liking is not good enough. You actually have to follow us.
Okay.
So please, everyone who liked us in the past, go and follow us on Facebook at all of our clinics. We do also have a podcast Instagram, and then you can check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And again, some of our blogs that are doing really great are the Most Protective Dog Breeds, 50 Cat Facts, and 50 Dog Facts. If you just Google those things, you'll actually see articles right there from Georgia Veterinary Associates in the Google page.
Perfect.
I guess, guys, that's it. You will remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys, and happy belated birthday to your mom, Sherry. So, next time. Bye.